Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 40 for Friday, April 24, 2009. I am in Cambridge, Massachusetts this week for my mother's 80th birthday. I've also had a chance to do my first rowing on the Charles River this season from the Cambridge Boat Club, which I joined last year. And although I rowed decades ago in high school, I'm pretty green with the training shell. In fact, this morning I had a brief dunk in the river next to the dock when the port oarlock came undone as I was moving from the boat to the dock. It was pretty embarrassing, but no harm was done, and I learned a valuable lesson about how tightly the oarlock has to be fastened. I'm really glad it didn't happen when I was 2 miles upstream. This week's interview is with the deputy editor of The New Yorker, who is responsible for the magazine's online presence, including a very successful Kindle launch in February. Pam McCarthy is a Kindle user herself, and I think you'll enjoy her observations on how reading The New Yorker in print differs from reading it on the Kindle. In news, we'll hear about the latest Kindle firmware update and a publisher who is single-handedly addressing the Kindle 2's contrast problem. For the tech tip, I finally screwed up my courage to try the custom screensavers hack for the Kindle 2, and I'll tell you how you too can replace Virginia Woolf et al. With photos of your dog or your favorite tree. The Kindle quote is from a Harvard story in this week's New Yorker. I'll have comments from Bob Hare, Carl Bunker, and Scott St. Amant. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes or Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. If you've checked your settings from the main menu of your Kindle lately, you'll probably see that a new firmware update has arrived, 2.0.3. Every time I hear of a firmware update, I hope it might mean a fix for the Kindle text contrast problem, so I was excited to see Stephen Windwalker in this week's Kindle Nation thinking along the same lines. Steve reported that the update arrived on April 21st. He added, quote, "Although it is too early to say exactly what it will do for you, my initial review of several fonts and graphics, comparing the same pages on two separate Kindle 2s with the naked eye, suggests that Amazon has taken significant steps toward fixing the lack of font contrast that had frustrated so many Kindle 2 owners with February's initial release of the device." With this news, I emailed the guru of Kindle 2 contrast problems, Ted Inouye, to see if he could confirm the improvement. It turns out that he and Stephen had been in touch on the matter, and Ted forwarded me their lengthy thread, which included this update from Steve based on conflicting reports and impressions he had received from Kindle owners after the initial Kindle Nation post. Steve wrote, "Some have formed impressions similar to mine, and others don't see a difference. A few people have suggested that the Kindle's display always appears a little sharper immediately following any upgrade. But after corresponding with Ted Inouye and looking closely at his very helpful webpage with microscopic analysis of Kindle fonts," and I'll have a link to that in the show notes, "my own conclusion is that if there has been an improvement in the display, it has not come by changing or otherwise enhancing the fonts themselves. Another possibility would involve applying some software process to the display background so as to sharpen contrast. Perhaps someday we will know, and I certainly apologize if I raised expectations unduly with my first report." Well, no worries, Stephen, and thanks for alerting me to the update in the first place. Kindle Nation is a free must-read weekly compendium of what's shaking in the Kindle sphere, so if you're not subscribed now, I urge you to do so. I'll have a link in the show notes for how you can get on his mailing list. Meanwhile, Ted Inouye has also emailed me a press release dated yesterday from Vellum Publishing in Round Top, New York, which was on kind of a related note. It stated that, quote, "It has responded to reader concerns that the text on the Kindle 2 is lighter and more difficult to read." That's a press release from Vellum Publishing. Vellum's president, Chet Meyer, posted a new video at its website, newkindlebooks.com, with the following announcement.
"In response to some of our readers' concerns, we also want you to know that we've reformatted all our digital books in bold print, which makes the text darker and easier to read on the Kindle too.
Vellum lists only 13 books at its website, all of them apparently in bold print, the better for reading on the Kindle too. I bought one that caught my eye, a scary screenplay titled The Harvard Man, for $4.79, and sure enough, the text is all in bold, and it's much easier to read than the usual text on my Kindle too. I like Chet Meyer's old-timey, enthusiastic video pitch, so I'll play a little more of it and put a link in the show notes.
We've even added screenplays and scripts for plays and musicals to provide the widest possible reading choices for the sophisticated Kindle reader. And thanks to each and every one of you out there who has taken a chance and supported us by purchasing our books. Thanks to you, it has helped make our motto a reality. When mainstream publishing finally went digital, thanks to you and your support, we were already there.
I have to say I'm not going to recommend The Harvard Man unless you're into serious and simplistic gore, like the beheading by machete at an outdoor table at Holyoke Center just down the street from where I'm working on the podcast today. I didn't get much further than that, to tell you the truth, and by then I'd already come across one typo, Radcliffe without the E, at location 61. But I'm passing the Vellum story along mainly because it's another indication that the Kindle 2 contrast issue has been perceived by at least one person as significant enough to justify a strategic response in bold print. Now, back to the firmware update. I received an endearingly unhelpful response from a nice lady at Kindle Support when I called yesterday to ask what the latest update does. It's going to be better, she enthused, but we don't know how it's going to be better. So there you have it. The creator of blogkindle.com, by the way, I'd like to find out who that is because I can't find any about information on that blog, which is a pretty good source of information. I'd like to interview them for the podcast sometime. So if you've got the blogkindle.com, let me know and it'd be fun to set up an interview. But in any event, blogkindle used a script by premier hacker Igor. This is premier Kindle hacker Igor, to peek inside the update packages for 2.0.3. BlogKindle did not mention any effect on screen contrast, but did report, quote, all in all, it looks like a collection of bug fixes. It's possible that TTS, that's text-to-speech, change is here, or is there. So that's a reference to the move prompted by the Authors Guild that we talked about last week, in which Amazon has said it would disable text-to-speech on the Kindle 2 for publishers and authors who request it. So there's some possibility that this firmware update accomplishes that nefarious project. Jason Schaffer, I guess it is, at mobilread.com this week posted, it appears to my eye anyway, and I'm not sure if this is some sort of placebo effect, that 2.0.3 has improved contrast by quite a noticeable amount. So if you think the latest Kindle firmware has somehow improved the contrast on your Kindle 2, please let me know. As I've said before, I don't have any trouble reading my Kindle 2, but people are not making this contrast problem up, and I hope Amazon solves it soon so we don't have to keep talking about it. Time now for the tech tip. Until this week, I will admit to having been quite a wimp in declining to try what many have assured me is a simple Kindle hack that frees you from the endless portraits of Oscar Wilde and Emily Dickinson as screensavers and lets you put your own images in the screensaver rotation. But Amazon in March announced in the customer discussions area, quote, Amazon.com customer service does not support or provide instructions for adding custom images to your Kindle to be used as screensavers. However, should you choose to do this on your own, it will not void your warranty. And I have never seen someone who tried the hack report that something terrible had happened, so I decided to give it a try. This is still risky business with plenty of caveats, so please don't try this if you're a beginner or have a low tolerance for things that might mess up your Kindle. Also, this hack makes it impossible for Amazon to automatically update the firmware on your Kindle via the WhisperNet. There is an easy way to uninstall the hack and update the firmware once you've heard there's a new one, but that's kind of a hassle. At this point, I think the hassle is worth it because I really like having my own photos on my Kindle 2 the way I did with my Kindle 1. If after all that you'd like to try creating your own screensavers on the Kindle, here's how to do it. The first thing is I recommend that you create a collection of images for your new screensavers. If you're going to use photos, they need to be about 600 pixels wide and 800 pixels tall. If you choose photos that you've taken on a vertical orientation with your digital camera, you can export them as JPEG files, that's .jpg, 600 pixels wide, and that should work. You can also use some other formats. You can use the PNG format, and then also GIF. So whichever format is most convenient for you to export will work. You put them in a folder that you can find easily, perhaps on your desktop, labeled Photos for Kindle Screensavers or something like that. Once you've assembled the photos that you want to use, here are the steps for getting those photos to appear on your Kindle 2 as screensavers. Now, the directions for Kindle 1 are different, and I've had them on the show before, so I'll put a link in the show notes for that if you'd like to go back and see how this all works on a Kindle 1. Step 1, first go to my show notes page for this episode. That's thekindlechronicles.com if you're not already there. By the tech tip, I will have a link to Clark Nova's post at mobilread.com. And once you find the post, read the post, and then at the bottom of it, click where it says attached files on the file named kindle2_screen_saver_hack0.4.zip. That's the file that will install the hack. So download that zip file to your hard drive and expand it so that you see a folder titled Kindle 2 Screensaver Hack 0.4. In that folder, double-click on the readme.txt file and print it out. I really recommend this because the directions that are bundled with the hack will really help you to follow this in addition to what I'm doing here on the podcast. Also in that folder, double-click. Okay, I already said that. That's so you're printing out the text description of the process at that point. So now what you want to do is plug your Kindle 2 into your computer with the USB cord, and from the folder titled Kindle 2 Screensaver Hack 0.4, copy or drag the file that's titled Update Kindle 2 User Screensavers.bin to the root of your Kindle 2. That means that the file will end up inside the Kindle icon on your desktop at the same level as the folders for the Kindle titled Audible, Documents, Music, and System. You want to make sure that you're moving the file titled Update Kindle 2 User Screensavers.bin and not the one that says Update Kindle 2 Restore Default Screen. We'll talk about that later. So the one that you want to do is Kindle 2 Screensaver Hack 0.4. Now the next thing you want to do is to click on the system folder so you can see its contents and delete the folder within the system folder that's titled simply Screensaver. That's screen_saver. This will delete the default screensavers, but you'll be able to get them back again if you wish to restore them. Still in the system folder, create a new folder with the exact same name, screen_saver. And in these directions, everything's lowercase. It's lowercase s on screen, as well as saver with an underscore between the two words. Now you want to copy the photos from that folder you created at the beginning, something like Photos for Kindle Screensavers, so that they are all moved into the new screensaver folder within the system folder of your Kindle. At this point, the photos are all there. You can go ahead and unplug the Kindle 2 from your computer. Now back on the Kindle, press the menu button and select Settings. Then press the menu button again and select Update Your Kindle. Click OK when asked if you wish to continue. You need to wait for the update to finish. You'll see a progress bar, empty at first and then with a bar filling it. Then your Kindle will restart and another progress bar will appear. When everything settles down to your Kindle home screen, slide the power switch to the right briefly to put your Kindle to sleep. And instead of Virginia Woolf, you should see one of the images that you placed in the screensaver folder appear as the screensaver. Now, when the next Kindle firmware update comes around, you're going to need to return to the Kindle 2 screensavers in order to get to it. The procedure is to plug in your Kindle into your computer, then go to the Kindle 2 screensaver hack 0.4 folder that you downloaded from Mobile Read. And in that folder, there's another file titled Update Kindle 2 Restore Default Screensavers.bin. Copy or drag that file to the same root level of your Kindle 2, so it's in there with the Audible and the system folders, and just leave it there. You don't need to do anything else. Unplug your Kindle 2, press the menu button, then select Settings. As set at the settings page, press the menu again and then update your Kindle. When the update is done, your Kindle will reboot with the original screensavers and you will be able to receive the new firmware update that Amazon will automatically send via WhisperNet. There is also a manual way to receive the firmware updates, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes. Now, in addition to these instructions, I really hope you'll read the full page of instructions from the Mobile Read folder and keep it in a safe place so you'll be able to find it when the Kindle firmware updates and you need to reverse this process to get the update. And it's also a good idea to make sure you know how to find that Kindle 2 screensaver hack 0.4 folder so you'll be able to find the .bin file that restores the original screensavers. So this is a pretty tricky procedure, but for me, I'm happy I took the plunge because now I love seeing my Kindle 2 go to sleep with my own photos nicely presented in black and white like art, and I hope it's something that some of you might want to try and that you'll enjoy it. I interviewed Pam McCarthy by phone on Tuesday, April 21st. She has been at The New Yorker since well before there were any new electronic platforms. Now, as deputy editor, she oversees the website, the digital and audio editions, and the Kindle platform. I began by asking her if she has come up against any resistance at the venerable literary print icon to moving into these new digital frontiers.
You know, I think that writers are very happy to see their work go to more people, if that's possible. And they tend to be very supportive of any technology that increases their audience.
That's cool.
And as far as the editors, the editors are living in the real world and know that there is a lot of kind of uncharted territory that we have to navigate, and they're interested in it.
Well, now, tell me the story of the Kindle. How far back does it go that someone, you or someone else, decided that there would be a New Yorker Kindle edition someday?
The launch of the Kindle at the end of 07 got our attention. You probably would have to have been living in a cave to not have it get your attention. Mm-hmm. It was pretty widely publicized. But the thing that got our attention specifically was the wireless delivery feature. We'd seen over the years a lot of e-readers, but the wireless delivery really put Kindle in a league of its own, unless I'm mistaken, and there were things that I wasn't aware of that seemed new to me and really notable. And then sure enough, throughout 2008, Kindle kept popping up. You know, you'd hear that someone had bought one or you'd see someone reading on it on the train. And readers started to ask why we weren't on it. Not a flood, but a few here and there. And finally, Amazon came to us, and they told us that we were one of the most requested magazines, and that did it.
Huh.
Flattery. Flattery worked.
Exactly.
But seriously, you know, like any other magazine, we're trying new technologies that seem to make sense for us, and we try particularly to experiment with the ones that readers have shown an interest in.
Now, did they come to you late last year, or what was the timing?
They came to us late last year.
Yeah.
It was late last year, yes, because we launched, I guess, in February.
Yeah, now, and they launched. It was pretty cool because the day of the launch of the Kindle 2 was when they announced that The New Yorker was online.
That's right, and that was not the original intention. It became clear about 10 days ahead of that could happen. So we finished up all our technical work on it and tried to make it happen, and it happened. And I think that was good for everyone.
It seemed to go pretty smoothly. I think I bought my subscription that first day. And have you had any glitches where issues just didn't get out in time or anything?
No, that's been very, very smooth. You know, we of course, have the entire issue in electronic form when we close on Friday night.
Right.
So it's a matter of porting it over to Amazon, and that's gone smoothly. It has required that we have someone check it all on Saturday and make sure that it's all in order.
Yeah.
But that's not been too onerous.
Huh. Now, one thing I noticed is that you don't have word counts on the articles, and I think some of the other newspapers that I subscribe to and magazines do. Was that a conscious decision or more technology-driven?
It was really a conscious decision. And the Kindle clearly doesn't replicate the magazine visually, but I wanted to preserve as much as possible a kind of literary presentation.
I see.
The traditional stack on the opening page of a story of department head, title, byline, and somehow it seemed to me that a 4 or 5-digit number is a quantification that seems out of place.
I see.
I mean, that said, you know, readers can't leaf through the Kindle in quite as easily a way as you can leaf through the magazine, and it may be that they really do want a quick way of knowing what it is they're taking on as they start a story.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling because, you know, because, like, say, if I subscribe to the Financial Times and if I see that there's, you know, 2,000 word count on a story, I know I'm settling in for a feature-length story.
Right.
And if it's, you know, if I don't have time to read a long story, I might go to the next one. And if it's just a 300-word item. So it kind of orients me on how large a bit of reading I have ahead of me. And there's no other good way to do that because you can't flip ahead of the pages.
True.
And stuff.
I may revisit it.
Yeah, and there might be another way to do that. Maybe there's a way to flag it on the table of contents so that it, because I like your idea to have it look as much like the actual edition as you can. But
then it may be that we all have to kind of rejigger our thinking a little bit about what constitutes, say, a kind of literary presentation. And it may be that that kind of a tool adds so much that it's worth giving a little bit. I mean, technology really forces us all to be flexible.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
You know, that's a good thing. The fact that it's not all written in ink and paper, as it were, makes a lot of things possible.
Yeah.
You know, it can drive you mad in one sense because there are so many possibilities, so many ways to do things. And there's no point at which it's all done once and for all.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it's a great advantage.
I understand you can't get into specifics on subscriptions, but could you characterize the how subscriptions have been going or what the feeling is at the New Yorker in terms of what the response has been to the Kindle edition?
You know, we've been told by Amazon that relative to other publications, it's been a very strong launch.
Hmm.
And week after week, the numbers increase. We've been number one in the magazine store on Kindle.
Now, was that right from the first day or pretty soon after?
From the first day. And, you know, we really had no expectations going in. We didn't know what to expect. So for someone with no expectations, being number one for 2 months now has been a very, very happy thing. I should be clear that all of these numbers add up to something that is really just a tiny portion of the million print subscribers we have.
Right.
But, you know, in all these new ventures, things tend to be segmented and each segment smaller. So that seems to be all right.
Well, and as that segment grows, I mean, it's got to be gratifying to have such a strong start in a segment that may be growing over the years.
It's been very gratifying, you know, not without bumps. When we started, we did start with only half the cartoons being offered. And that was really a practical decision. We do a bundle of cartoons for our website, and we thought that it would be simplest to offer the same bundle. And we were wrong. That was the wrong decision. You know, we are asking people to pay a sum that's comparable to a print subscription, and people spoke up very, very vocally, very soon.
That's good.
And you know, we listened, and we figured out a way to do it that wouldn't slow down the production process. I mean, that of course was our concern, not a kind of stinginess, but just that it was going to take more time. And we figured out how to do it and meet the deadline. And all the cartoons are up there now.
Yeah, it's great. I noticed that. That was a nice change you made.
Yeah, well, we learn.
Now, do you have a Kindle yourself or that you're reading? Or
I do have a Kindle. I love my Kindle.
Can you say what else you're subscribing to?
Sure. I am subscribing to the New York Times, to the Atlantic, to the Vanity Fair Daily Blog, to Time, and I have a load of books on there, too.
Now, have you had a chance to read The New Yorker in print and then read the same article on the Kindle and notice any differences in the experience as a reader?
Yes, I have. And, you know, it's clearly not a substitute for print magazines. Mm-hmm. It's quite a different experience. For books, it's much closer to the print experience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as you know, newspapers and magazines are much more complex. They have many more parts to them than just the words. And I think a great deal is lost on the Kindle. It has fantastic advantages, but there is a tremendous amount that just isn't there. Well, let me tell you how I read the New York Times every day, because that's the thing I do most. Mm-hmm. I'll come back to the New Yorker. You know, I'm a publisher's dream because I subscribe twice.
Uh-huh.
I get the print edition of the New York Times on my stoop each morning. And I look at the front page. I look at the hierarchy of stories, what's being positioned as the lead, what's inside. I look at the images, that very strong image this morning of the soldier in Afghanistan's coffin coming back to the U.S. I read a few stories if I have time. And then I cart my Kindle to the subway, and I really read the stories. And in fact, that is where I read the story yesterday of this soldier killed in a firefight. And read it in a way that, interestingly, I might not have in the print edition. In the print edition, when I settle down to reading after my first look through, I tend to jump a lot, and I think the web has kind of bounced back onto our reading and affected it. I tend to read a paragraph and then read another paragraph from another story, an adjacent story. I get caught by a headline. I move around a lot. I think I will come back to this, and then often I don't. But the Kindle, as you know because you have one, is a very immersive experience.
That's a good way to describe it.
Once you're in, it's not that it's so hard to get out. You actually don't really want to get out of the story. You're not distracted by other things that seem equally appealing. So I find that when I read the paper on the train, I tend to read stories through to the end much more frequently than I do when I'm reading the print edition. But invariably, I find that I want to go back to either the web or the print edition for something, maybe one of those amazing graphics that the Times does, their stories, the charts and graphs. And similarly, the New Yorker publishes just superb illustration and photography and some of the best people working in the world. And those pieces of art really enrich the stories. I don't think the reproduction on Kindle is good enough to include them yet, and that's really a loss.
Do you think that there might be a way to start with black and white photographs like that one with Dorothy Wickenden's piece?
I do think that black and white is the place to start and the place where they will get it right soonest. But I think those pieces in Dorothy Wickenden's piece, and for those who haven't seen it, they're archival, family photographs, black and white photographs from the early 20th century. And I think they would have been quite muddy and hard to read.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. They'd do something for sure.
On the Kindle, yeah. And the words are very strong. I mean, we are a magazine that really puts the words in a paramount position, so that you may lose a lot, but still the main thing of the magazine is there.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that Kindle tosses out the window that I regret is the whole world of graphic design. It's a world I really love.
Yeah.
We have our classic urban typeface. You see it in the logo. Mm-hmm. And you see it in the logo on the Kindle, but then that's it. In the magazine, we use it throughout for various display typefaces. Mm-hmm. And we have a really elegant page design. I mean, I think if you toss a New Yorker on a table and it just opened to any spread, and toss a bunch of other magazines, it would be very clear which one was the New Yorker.
Yeah, it's very distinctive.
Yeah, and I think that communicates something to a reader. And Amazon has a kind of requisite formatting, so all of that art is lost.
Yeah.
Ads. I mean, ads are another thing. Yeah. I mean, readers have always loved the ads in the New Yorker, whether they're the very luxurious full-page ads in the front of the magazine or the one-inchers for Berets and Country Inns that are in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really part of who we are.
That's definitely true.
But that said, you know, if your goal is to get through Cy Hirsch's new piece on the plane, or if you're going to be out of town and you want your Monday issue on Monday morning, mm-hmm. this is really a great solution.
Yeah, and it really, it sort of focuses back on the writing, so it's... From an author's point of view, it almost gives the opportunity for a more intimate connection with the reader.
Right. I think that's true. Though I think, again, our graphic design is such that it really allows the words to be the most important thing and let people think to them without being distracted.
Yeah, they're never fighting with it. Well, I put a note up on Twitter saying that I was going to talk to you to ask you if there are any questions, and I have somebody who's responded, does she have any job openings? So I hope it's a really growing department there, the digital part of the New Yorker. But do you have plans for growth or adding any staff? Or?
Well, we are not adding any staff right now, but we have a healthy department, and they're generating new projects all the time. The primary focus is the website, and we have a very strong roster of podcasts.
Oh yeah, it's excellent. That Curtis Fox is doing an amazing job for the podcast.
Yes, he really is. So no, we're not hiring right this second, but you know, people do leave.
That's good. One last thing, do you see, and maybe you already have this, but is there a possibility of a combined print Kindle subscription package that would
I just don't know about that.
Yeah.
It's too early to say.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a combined digital edition online and print subscription, and we're working on that right this minute.
Yeah, I would think the combined Kindle one would be a real natural.
It's interesting. I think that we none of these new technologies is where we're going to end up, and I think one reason that you might want a combined subscription is because none of these devices, of these platforms, is providing everything.
Yeah.
The original format provides, and I think it'll be a good long time before it settles out.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone really knows.
Yeah.
I think we're going to go through a long, long series of advances in technology, of new formats being put out there, of people trying them and responding, of the developers being responsive to the reaction, and back and forth.
Yeah.
And I think over time, something will evolve that will make us think, whoa, of course this is how it had to come out.
Yeah, but you've got to be playing in the space to be able to spot it and take advantage of it.
I think so. And for us, the most important thing in all of this is to know that our readers can find us where they want to find us.
Yeah.
And that's my goal.
How about an iPhone app? Have you thought about that?
Well, we do have a cartoon app on the iPhone.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We do. Uh-huh. Fairly new. I would love to have an iPhone app of the magazine, but it would certainly not be for free.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would think that would be something that people would be willing to pay for as well.
Yeah. I think they would. Happily, readers seem to be quite willing to pay for the magazine, and that's a good thing, because what we do doesn't come cheaply. When you send writers to Afghanistan or photographers across the country, or checking every fact, right down to proofreading every word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's exciting. I was really glad to see the New Yorker on the Kindle, and it sounds like you've really got a head of steam going into a lot of new directions. So,
well, we're excited about it. It's been an interesting project. Whole process of getting the thing up and running was not as difficult as some other new platforms. Because Amazon has kept the device and the content design so simple, it didn't require the kind of intense scrutiny and problem solving and even soul searching about identity that come with other platforms, like the website or even audio.
Yeah. So there's kind of an advantage of the straitjacket that they put you in.
Yeah, there were. I mean, there were still some production issues to work through, some formatting issues to work through, and a few editorial issues that the technology raised.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to replicate the flow of the print magazine, but putting the arts listings at the start didn't seem right.
Mm-hmm.
They take up so many pages on Kindle that they'd really bog down someone who was browsing through the magazine.
Ah.
So on Kindle, the goings-on-about-town listings are at the back.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Another question was whether or not we'd put the cartoons inside the stories.
Uh-huh.
As we do in the print edition, or to group them. And my preference would be to scatter them throughout, provide a kind of visual break for people who are making their way through a long story, and some variety. They're not just visual, there's content there.
Mm-hmm. Was that an option technologically?
It was, but the Kindle page size made it very awkward. You would have a page of text and then a page with a cartoon and then of text. So it would interrupt the reader in a much more aggressive way than the cartoons do now, a kind of read me now moment. So we made the cartoons their own section.
Yeah, I think that works. And, on the Kindle, too, with the 16 shades of gray, the resolution is certainly better than on the original Kindle.
Yeah, no, we're very happy with the way the cartoons look.
I want to thank Pam McCarthy for a great interview, and I highly recommend subscribing to The New Yorker on your Kindle, or at least trying out the 14-day free subscription. For only $2.99 a month, you'll receive a ton of powerful, insightful prose, along with excellent poetry and smart cartoons, fresh on your Kindle doorstep every Monday morning. And if I heard Pam right, you may be seeing word counts on articles sometime in the future, which I think would be a helpful tweak for an already very strong Kindle edition. Time now for the Kindle quote. In addition to the Kindle, Pam McCarthy's area includes the excellent New Yorker podcast produced by TheNewYorker.com and Curtis Fox Productions. I was listening to one yesterday while walking to the Cambridge Boat Club, and it happened to be a story involving Harvard and the return of some precious monastery bells to Russia. The podcast was an interview with Elif Bateman, author of The Bells, How Harvard Helped Preserve a Russian Legacy, in the April 27th edition of The New Yorker. Here is the opening paragraph. Father Roman is the head bell ringer at the Danilov Monastery, the working residence of the Moscow Patriarch and the seat of the Holy Synod. But the first time he rang the monastery's original bells was in 2003 at Harvard's Lowell House, where they had hung since the early years of Stalin's terror, when bell ringing was banned throughout Soviet Russia. I met Father Roman this past June when he returned to Harvard to help commemorate the bells' repatriation. He was presented to me rather abruptly by one of the Lowell House masters. "This is Father Roman," she announced, and turning, I beheld a towering figure in his early 30s, well over 6 feet tall, with enormous hands and a flowing chestnut beard, wearing a long black habit and a skufia, the black pointed cap of a Russian Orthodox monk. "And this," she continued, gesturing toward an easel, "is a picture of Father Roman." A large photograph showed a gray-eyed man in a belfry, beard blowing in the wind, against a leaden sky crossed by the ropes of Russian church bells. When I asked Father Roman whether I might meet with him later in the day, he produced from the folds of his habit a slim black Nokia telephone, whose ringtone, I learned, was a recording of Russian church bells. That's the Kindle quote this week from The Bells, How Harvard Helped Preserve a Russian Legacy, in the current issue of The New Yorker. Here's some more of those bells from the podcast, and I'll put a link to the podcast in the show notes. Time now for your comments. Bob Hare emailed, "I enjoyed the podcast on the Rocket Book 2. My brother got one many years ago and planted the seed of desire for such readers in me. I wouldn't care to publicly admit all the platforms that I have tried to read on since that exposure. I call my K2 Bob's Rocket Book to commemorate that early experience. Thank you for your good and interesting works. Your approach to celebrating the Kindle is unique. I marvel at the levels of interest in, love of, and antipathy towards the Kindle shown by folks. I see my K2 as a portal to information and entertainment. It has freed me from my monitor for reading. I look forward to a larger screen format for professional reading and newspaper magazine formats. Maybe by that time, Amazon will have discovered the existence of PDF formats. One can dream. To answer one of your standard questions, I do find myself reading more now than I did pre-Kindle. I expect my reading to increase as electronic formatting improves, allowing me access to more trade documents and manuals. I am also a rabid audiobook and podcast listener." Well, thank you, Bob, for your comment. I have a friend in Fairbanks, Alaska, Kes Woodward, who remembers my enthusiasm when I bought a Rocketbook e-reader, and he still chuckles every time a fellow Rocketbook owner surfaces in response to the podcast. I know we are not alone. Carl Bunker writes, "I'm not sure where I heard about this website. It may even have been on your podcast, in which case I apologize for telling you something you already know. At OscuraPress.com/Mysteria, a free service is available that after setup will watch your Amazon wish list for any print books that become available as Kindle books. When I first got my Kindle 2, one of the first things I did was to go through my Amazon wish list to see what books on my list were available as Kindle books. I was pretty disappointed over how many were not, and spent a lot of time clicking on the Tell the Publisher I'd like to read this book on the Kindle link, for whatever that's worth. I signed up with Mysteria, and in the following few weeks, I've received notification from them about several books that are newly available as Kindle books. This is somewhat like the Zoolert.com site you mentioned this week, except that Zoolert only notifies you about price changes on Kindle books that are already available as Kindle books when you set up the alert. The service isn't perfect. For example, although you can add and remove items from your Mysteria watch list, deleting items doesn't seem to work if the item is still on your Amazon wish list. So Mysteria is apparently patiently making periodic checks to see when the Cuisinart stainless steel skillet on my Amazon wish list becomes available as a Kindle book. Thanks for the always excellent podcast, Carl Bunker." And Scott St. Amant writes, "First, I'd like to say that I'm really enjoying your Kindle Chronicles podcast. Second, I'd like to suggest that you start naming your episodes with a naming convention that starts out with the Kindle Chronicles or KCP or something like that before the 39 Chris Danielson. I subscribe to many different podcasts, and when I scroll through the names of the most recent podcasts, it makes it hard to identify the Kindle Chronicles. Also, I use Smart Playlist in iTunes using the name field, and I can't pull Kindle Chronicles episodes in that way. Thanks again for doing the podcast, Scott." Well, Scott, this is a great suggestion, and so beginning with this episode, I will title each podcast with TKC, that stands for The Kindle Chronicles, which is in my URL, followed by the episode number. So in this case, the episode should show up on your iTunes or other podcatcher list as TKC 40 Pam McCarthy. And I always list the name of the person in the interview in the title of the podcast. If you'd like to leave an audio comment, it's really simple to do. You can just call 206-666-2713. It's like a regular phone message line, so you can leave a message, listen to it, re-record it if you don't like it the first time. And it's always great to hear people's voices in the comments. And I also love getting text comments, which you can do by sending me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. And there's a couple of comments on the last episode, so be sure to check that out at the show notes. If you'd like to be included in the Kindle Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. I send everyone on that list an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode, as well as occasional alerts and questions related to late-breaking Kindle news items. I will be doing next week's interview in person in nearby Arlington, Massachusetts, when I visit the home of Stephen Windwalker, a pioneer Kindle guide writer and creator of the weekly Kindle Nation email newsletter. He has promised me some homemade blueberry pancakes on Monday, so I'm really looking forward to that. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day.